Welcome back to the North Carolina Reading Service. Your readers are
Dick Hayden
and Judith Dykstar. We'll begin with the second hour of news from the NNO, from the New Bern Sun Journal, Greenville Daily Reflector, and the Wilmington Star News. But now we begin with the TV listings for this evening, and I'm going to let Dick take care of that. Here you go, Dick.
Well, thank you, Judith. I appreciate that. On ABC tonight, folks, at 8 o'clock until 10, it'll be American Idol. It's 816, the Judges Song Contest. It is new. And at 10 o'clock, Paradise in the Palaces of Crown Kings. That is new. On CBS this evening at 8 o'clock, The Neighborhood, Welcome to Pomp and Circumstance. Welcome to Venice. That is a new episode, and it's also the season finale. At 9 o'clock, it'll be NCIS titled Nexus. It's a new episode, and it is the season finale. Then at 10 o'clock, we have a rerun of a program called Watson, and the title is Teeth Marks. Fox, America's Most Wanted Missing Persons at 8 o'clock. This is titled People Do Not Just Disappear, and it is a new episode. And then we have at 9 o'clock, America's Most Wanted, FBI Top 10 Fugitive, a new episode, followed at 10 o'clock by WRAL's 10 p.m. News on Fox 50. On NBC tonight, The Voice, The Playoffs, Part 2. This is a new episode. And that's going to be followed at 10 o'clock by Yes, Chef. And that is a new episode titled Martha's Roast, as the chefs prepare five appetizers one at a time to go along with Martha's Roast Chicken. I'm not sure which Martha that is, but it's Martha nonetheless. Let's see, that'll carry us on to ION, and we have reruns of FBI tonight. At 8 o'clock, Short Squeeze, 9 o'clock, Trigger Effect, and 10 o'clock, Straight Flush. I know that one, that's a poker game. On PBS tonight, Antiques Roadshow at 8 o'clock, and it's a rerun celebrating Asian Pacific heritage. At 9 o'clock, Antiques Roadshow, a rerun, Santa Clara Hour 3. And at 10 o'clock, Independent Lens, a new episode, Matter of Mind, My Alzheimer's. We move on to MNT when we have some reruns here. 8 o'clock, Dateline, The Capture. 9 o'clock, Law & Order SVU, Devastating Story. And another Law & Order SVU at 10, Granting Immunity. On CW, a new episode of All American titled Award Tour, and it's the season finale. Then at 9 o'clock, a rerun of Trivial Pursuit, Bar Trivia. And at 10 o'clock and 10:30, live editions of the National News Desk. On A&E tonight, live police patrol, some new, some rerun, and a couple of others. So 8 o'clock and 8:30 are individual episodes of live PD police patrol reruns. At 9 o'clock and 9:30, episodes of live PD police new episodes. At 10 o'clock and 10:30, episodes of Florida, and those are new. AMC, the movie tonight, starting at 8, going all the way until 11, is The Fifth Element from 1997. Gary Oldman, Ian Holm, Bruce Willis all are in this one. A New York City cab driver tries to save 2259 Earth from impact with an onrushing anti-life force. Scary. I don't know if I want to watch it or not. A lot of people did, though, because it got 3 stars. On the BET channel, at 8 o'clock has The Chi, C-H-I. A rerun. 9 o'clock, a rerun of Crime called Shawana King. 10 o'clock, a rerun of Crime, Candace Martinez. On Disney, Big City Greens at 8 and again at 8:30. 9 o'clock will be Stugo. 9:30, Kiff. 10 and 10:30, episodes of Jesse. The Discovery Channel, we're dealing with Contraband again. 8 o'clock, Contraband Seized at the Border. A rerun, grinding to a halt. 9 o'clock, Contraband just plain seized. Not telling you where. It's Grandma's Day Out, and it's a new episode. Shame on you, Grandma. You shouldn't be doing that stuff. And at 10 o'clock, Contraband Seized at the Border, a rerun, Deadly Cargo. Well, it's here. Hockey. ESPN, starting at 7. NHL Hockey's second round teams to be announced. 9:30, NHL Hockey second round teams to be announced. So, we're in playoff season. I think the Canes are tomorrow, Tuesday. So, maybe you don't care about who's playing today. We'll find out. Nickelodeon is next up on the list. They're doing Friends, reruns of Friends. They have a lot of them. So they're going to share their Friends with us at 8, 8:30, 9, 9:30, 10, and 10:30. And on TNT, they're heading off into NBA basketball playoffs. First round, teams to be announced. They always do that. And that goes until 10. And guess what? From 10 on, NBA basketball first round teams to be announced. That takes us to our last one, which is the USA Channel. They are having reruns tonight of Law & Order Special Victims Unit at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. And with that, Judith, over to you.
Thank you, Dick. And we have a few announcements for you this morning. This first one is an announcement from Disability Rights North Carolina, DRNC. Our work is threatened. Can we count on you so our community can continue to count on us? Did you know this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Protection and Advocacy PNA Network? As North Carolina's designated PNA, Disability Rights North Carolina, DRNC, has proudly carried out federally mandated mission, protecting and advocating for the rights of people with disabilities across our state. Funding cuts threaten the services and protections we provide to individuals with disabilities and those who we love and care for them. This isn't just a budget line. This is about real people losing access to education, health care, safe housing, and the support they need to live with dignity and independence. We are proud of what we've accomplished, but we cannot continue this work without your support. We urge you to act now to protect the rights and safety of disabled North Carolinians. Together, we've built something powerful over the last 50 years. Let's make sure it lasts for the next 50 and beyond. To find out how you can help, go to https://disabilityrightsnc.org/takeaction. Tactile tours are available at the North Carolina Museum of Art. These tours are designed for visitors who are blind or have low vision. The docent-led tours explore the museum's collection through audio description, tactile experiences, and by engaging the senses. Tours are available by request only. You must arrange them at least 2 weeks in advance. To schedule a tactile tour, please contact Accessibility Coordinator Molly Hall at mhall@ncartmuseum.org or call 919-664-6854. Have you obtained your free currency reader yet? The Department of Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing is now providing a free currency reader to all eligible blind or visually impaired individuals. The device is small, compact, and runs on a AAA battery, which is included. To use the currency reader, simply insert a U.S. bill into the reader and press the button. The device will tell the note's denomination. To request your currency reader, fill out an application form, which is available to download at www.bep.gov. It must be signed by a competent authority, such as a doctor, who can certify your eligibility, and simply mail it to the address on the application. Once your application is verified, a reader will be mailed to you at no charge. For more information about the U.S. Currency Reader Program, visit www.bep.gov or call toll-free 844-815-9388. Affordable and accessible housing. Know your rights. Join the Triangle Disability Awareness Council for a seminar about affordable and accessible housing and the rights of people with disabilities. This seminar is for tenants as well as landlords and housing providers and will be held in person and on Zoom. Speaker Michael Mansett, lead attorney, Fair Housing Project Legal Aid of North Carolina, will cover affordable and accessible housing, home ownership, and rental, landlord, and tenant rights, and reasonable accommodation versus modification. There will be plenty of time for Q&A. The event will be held on May 7th from 11 to 3 in person at 2501 Homestead Road, room 109 Chapel Hill, and on Zoom, and a link will be provided at registration. You can register by going to www.triangledac.org/DAC event/affordable and accessible housing. For more information, call TDAC at 919-245-4337 or email info@triangledac.org or visit their website, www.triangledac.org. Reasonable accommodation upon request. And we have some local plays with audio description. In Raleigh on Sunday, May 11th, Schoolhouse Rock Live Jr., 3 p.m. at Raleigh Little Theater, 301 Pogue Street, Raleigh, 919-821-3111. And there's a note here that there's a free ticket for your driver, so be sure to ask. And in Greensboro, Saturday, May 10th, Back to the Future, 2 p.m. Sunday, May 11th, Back to the Future, 1 p.m. Tanger Center, 300 North Elm Street in Greensboro. And if you need further information, call them at 336-333-6500. You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, connecting people who are blind and print impaired to each other, their families and communities, by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. In addition to using specially tuned subchannel radio receivers, NCRS streams our programming on our website at ncreadingservice.org. Listen by using the Listen Live Streaming Audio Player located at the upper right-hand corner of our website pages. If you have an assisted technology device such as Alexa or a Google Home, just say, "Tune in NC Reading Service" to listen instantly. We also provide podcasts of over 50 magazines and other information and entertainment programs following the initial broadcast. Please visit our website, ncreadingservice.org, and click on Skip to Podcast section. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once again, that number is 919-832-5138. And we thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Dick?
Thank you, Judith. Our first stop next is to Wilmington and the Star News. Existing Brunswick shopping centers are trying to stay alive. Competition for stores emerges as commercial growth continues in Brunswick County. Older strip malls in Brunswick County face competition from newer developments. Vacancies exist in older shopping centers, prompting leasing agents to seek new tenants. New shopping centers are being built throughout the county, including a Publix and a Walmart in Carolina Shores. And commercial growth is tied to the county's increasing residential population. As newer commercial businesses come into the county, existing strip malls with vacancies are trying to compete. And several new strip malls have been built in Brunswick County over the past 5 years, with fresher, bigger competition rolling in. Existing strip malls are fighting to stay relevant. Let's start with existing vacancies. Both beach and some inland towns in Brunswick have a variety of shopping centers and small strip malls scattered throughout. Wilson Glasgow is a leasing agent for Aston Properties out of Charlotte, which has a few storefronts ready to be leased in Shallott Crossing Shopping Center. Some strip malls may have anchor tenants, Glasgow explained. Anchor tenants are big box grocery or retail stores that bring in a lot of traffic. Belk and Home Depot are the two big anchor stores for the Shallott Crossing Shopping Center, which was built in 1984, according to LoopNet.com. Stuart Davidson is a leasing agent through Mark Properties for both Twin Creek Plaza in Shallott and Live Oak Village near Southport. LoopNet.com states Twin Creek Plaza was built in 1984 and Live Oak Village in 1975. Simple maintenance and routine work keeps facilities intact and functional. Davidson said. Everything doesn't have to be a 2017 shopping center. Just because it's an older center doesn't mean it looks old or is run down, he added. Like many strip malls in the area, there are some commercial spaces that have been empty for years, Glasgow noted. Lowe's Foods and CVS used to be the main anchors for Live Oak Village. However, a new Lowe's Foods was built across the street in 2020 as an anchor to a larger shopping center. CVS also relocated to its own building in the same area. And a few years later, after Lowe's Foods left Live Oak Village, Hobby Lobby moved in. Owners will sometimes cold call local businesses and local brokers to see if business owners are interested in relocating or opening a new storefront, Glasgow said. When it comes to having a lot of vacancies, both Glasgow and Davidson said it's up to the property owners to continue seeking tenants or sell the entire property. New shopping centers are being built all over the county. Leland currently has seven major grocery stores, Harris Teeter, Lowe's, Foods, Aldi, and a Walmart Supercenter are all located along U.S. 17. The town also has a Piggly Wiggly and two Food Lion locations. Site plans for the Savannah Branch Town Center Shopping Center, headed by Branch Properties and Columbia Properties, include a new Publix grocery store along U.S. 17 across from Brunswick Forest. Savannah Branch Town Center, if approved, would be roughly 17 acres and have 10 storefronts and two out parcels, according to Columbia's website. The website indicates plans for a Grand Nails Salon and an Emerge Ortho Clinic. A Publix and a Walmart are being built in Carolina Shores along U.S. 17. Both grocery store chain plans include additional commercial space and large parking lots. Shopping centers and grocery stores in St. James and Boiling Spring Lakes are also early in the phases of discussion and planning. And here's more development news. Over 100 acres of commercial space in Boiling Springs Lakes is up for grabs along North Carolina 87, while less than 15 acres of commercial property in St. James off NC 211 is being proposed for commercial development. St. James is looking at a development called Harbor and Canal, which would feature a grocery store and other retail space. The approximate 14-acre commercial area is expected to be built between the town hall complex and Generations Church alongside NC 211. Nine commercial outparcels are outlined in the conceptual master plan. The outparcels range from 1.35 acres to 2.5 acres and line NC 211. A popular anchor in a strip mall could cause higher lease prices compared to shopping centers that do not have a big anchor, Glasgow said. At Shalott Crossing, 1,600 square feet could cost $25 a square foot. This price would be the yearly cost to rent the space out. The marketplace at Waterford and Leland also has several 1,800 square foot vacant spaces, leasing it for $32 per square foot per year, according to LoopNet.com. Southport Crossings, where the newer Lowe's Food near Southport is located, has available commercial space. LoopNet.com prices outparcel lots at $1,582.35 an acre. Got to get that 35 cents in there. As Brunswick County continues to see rapid residential growth, people can expect to see more commercial development as well. The population growth certainly correlates with more retail development and commercial development as a whole, Glasgow said. Judith?
Thank you, Dick. And this article is from the Wilmington Star News. Headline reads, "When will the drawbridge be replaced in Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina?" Wrightsville Beach drawbridge falls in state funding ranks years after replacement proposal. The Hyde Trask Memorial Bridge to Wrightsville Beach was not selected for funding in the NC Department of Transportation's 2026 through 2035 State Transportation Improvement Program. The bridge was deemed safe but deteriorating, requiring costly maintenance and major rehabilitation every 10 to 15 years. While a replacement was proposed in 2019 due to age and high crash rates, the project remains unfunded despite a recent three-hour closure caused by debris. 6 years after replacement was proposed, a new Hanover County drawbridge is still waiting for funding. The Hyde Trask Memorial Bridge, which serves as the gateway to Wrightsville Beach, was not selected for the seventh edition of the NC Department of Transportation's State Transportation Improvement Program, also known as STIP, S-T-I-P. Prioritization 7.0 outlines funding and construction timelines for projects from 2026 to 2035. Wrightsfield Beach's drawbridge did not score high enough to be considered for funding in the next round that the Board of Transportation is expected to adopt this summer. Still, the department plans to continue pursuing the project when the STIP is updated in a few years, NCDOT spokesperson Andrew Barksdale said. STIP projects are evaluated through an analysis of existing and future conditions, expected benefits of the improvement project, the project's multimodal characteristics, and local planning organization input. Roughly 1,350 of the state's 13,800 bridges are in poor condition. NCDOT describes poor condition bridges as safe, but with components that are deteriorating. It would cost more than $4 billion to replace all poor condition bridges statewide. The department inspects each bridge at least once every 2 years. Why does Wrightsfield Beach need a new drawbridge? The Hyde Trask Memorial Bridge is nearing the end of its lifespan after 67 years in operation. Back in 2019, NCDOT forecasted the bridge's remaining lifespan at 23 years. When the replacement project was proposed, average annual maintenance costs were $234,102.51. Major rehabilitation, like the $9 million project in 2014, are needed every 10 to 15 years to keep the bridge viable. The bridge experiences corrosion of the steel grid deck due to salt water. The water pours from boats and trailers, leaving the boat launch just below the bridge. The deck of this area requires recoating every 6 months instead of annually due to the salt water exposure, according to a replacement feasibility study. When will Wrightsfield Beach's other bridges be replaced? A separate project will replace the bridges at Causeway Drive and Salisbury Street over Banks Channel and Lee's Cut. Construction on the project is expected to cost $82.3 million and is scheduled to begin in 2028. Right-of-way acquisition will begin this summer. Two of the three bridges are in critical condition. In order to replace them while maintaining access to the island, the replacement bridges will have to be constructed one at a time. Construction on each bridge is expected to take 24 months. While many residents hope for increased traffic capacity as a result of the project, NCDOT officials said that the purpose of the project was to replace the aging structures. The department determined that the proposed bridges would adequately serve projected traffic levels. Dick?
Thanks, Judith. Off we go to New Bern and the New Bern Sun Journal. Our first article is titled, Carolina East Medical Center Receives A Safety Grade, meaning the letter A, as high as you can get. Carolina East Medical Center has received its second consecutive A patient safety grade from a nationally known hospital watchdog organization. The Leapfrog Group, a national nonprofit that sets standards for excellence in patient care, provided the Carolina East Medical Center with the grade for the spring. Carolina East also received an A grade in the fall, said Brandy Popp, Director of Public Relations for Carolina East. Safety grades are updated twice annually in the fall and spring. Leapfrog assigns an A, B, C, D, or F grade to general hospitals across the country based on more than 30 national performance measures, reflecting errors, accidents, injuries, and infections, as well as the systems hospitals have in place to prevent them. I am so proud of the care and compassion offered by our 3,600 employees and 400-plus volunteers who show up daily to ensure our patients' safety, said Michael Smith, President and Chief Executive Officer of Carolina East Health System. Our most recent grade of A from one of the country's most recognized ratings companies is another way we show our commitment to caring for our more than 400,000 patients last year. The LeapFrog Hospital Safety Grade stands as the only hospital rating system that is focused solely on preventable medical errors, infections, and injuries that result in the deaths of more than 500 patients a day in the United States, Pop said. The program is peer-reviewed, fully transparent, and free to the public. Achieving an A hospital safety grade reflects enormous dedication to patient safety, said Leah Binder, president and CEO of the LeapFrog Group. I extend my congratulations to Carolina East Medical Center, its leadership, clinicians, staff, and volunteers for creating a culture where patients come first. Judith?
Thank you, Dick. I'm going to switch over now to the Greenville Reflector with this article, Commissioners to Get Budget, Consider Resolution Against House Bill. The Pitt County Board of Commissioners is set to begin deliberations today on the county's 2025-26 spending plan and consider a resolution against state action on zoning rules, among other business. County Manager Janice Gallagher is scheduled to present the staff's recommended operating budget, which will include information about expected revenues and tax rate for the coming fiscal year. Gallagher is expected to review expenditures outlined in the plan prior to a series of workshops in which commissioners will hear from department heads about needs and existing resources for law enforcement, emergency services, health and social services, and county school, Pitt Community College, and other operations. The workshops are scheduled for 8:30 a.m. Tuesday through Thursday in the Eugene James Auditorium at the County Office Building, 1717 West 5th Street. A public hearing on the budget is set for 6 p.m. June 2nd in the County Building. The budget must be approved by June 30th. The budget proposal was not included in agenda materials released earlier this week. The resolution against NC House Bill 765 aims to stake out the county's position on a proposal in the General Assembly to reform how local government regulates development. The 31-page bill is described by supporters as a way to encourage development of affordable housing, but it places numerous restrictions on how counties and municipalities can plan growth and creates avenues for officials to be sued if they stand in the way of certain developments. The county resolution says the bill would significantly limit the ability of local governments across the state to make decisions regarding local land use planning and zoning and undermine the authority entrusted to elected county leaders by their communities. Further, it says the bill usurps current county planning and zoning ordinances that promote the health, safety, and general welfare of the residents and undo years of thoughtful and consistent local land use planning and regulation. In other business, a board is scheduled to consider reports on broadband access, National Travel and Tourism Week, Economic Development Week, suspension of federal BRIC funding, and plans for a crosswalk on Four Lines Road to South Central High School. Also, a request from Caroline Transport, LLC, to operate a non-emergency transport franchise, approval of a restructuring plan for the Pitt County Cultural Arts and Recreation Advisory Council, and finally, reappointments to the Human Relations Commission. Dick?
Thanks, Judith. The Daily Reflector in Greenville also has this article, Town Common Bulkhead Construction, Fire Tower Donation on Greenville City Council Agenda. Nearly $15 million in construction contracts to build a new Town Common Bulkhead and Esplanade along the Tar River are up for consideration by the Greenville Council today. The council is being asked to award a nearly $14.34 million contract to Trader Construction Company of New Bern to install a new bulkhead structure and other improvements along the river's edge of the downtown park. That includes terrace seating and a multi-use path that will provide east-to-west connection through the park closer to the river. Upgrades are also planned for the Greenville Toyota Amphitheater's loading zone, which will improve access for a broader range of performers, vehicles, and equipment, according to the Council's agenda materials. The project was twice put out to bid, and Trader was the only company to respond. The construction contract allows for a duration of 400 days. Staff is proposing the project be funded with a $5 million previously approved by the General Assembly. The remainder of the cost will be financed. Estimates for the work totaled $22 million when approved in 2023. The Council is also being asked to award a $538,554 contract to Moffitt and Nickel to provide construction administration services. Moffitt and Nickel designed the project. The contract will require the company to undertake program management and team coordination, conduct pre-construction surveys and drawings, and conduct field views while the project is underway. In other business on Monday, council members are scheduled to consider accepting the 786 square feet of property located on the south side of East Fire Tower Road, east of Bayswater Road. According to agenda materials, Lewis Land Development, LLC, is donating the property where the old NC Forest Service fire tower stands to be used as part of a public art project. Monday's meeting is at 6 p.m. in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 200 West 5th Street. The Council also will hold a 4 p.m. workshop session in the conference room number 337. The agenda includes a discussion of the proposed purchase of a new Emerald Express trolley. The Council is also scheduled to discuss a request from the City's Historic Preservation Commission to further delay the demolition of the Jacob W. Higgs historic home located at 1112 Dixon Avenue. The Council voted last year to demolish the home but delayed it for 365 days so Preservation North Carolina could work with the property owners to save the structure for purchase. The delay will expire on or about June 3rd. Other items on Monday's regular meeting agenda include a request to authorize Greenville Utilities Commission to extend sewer services to the proposed Pitt County Megasite property without voluntary annexation into the city. Presentation of the city's proposed fiscal year 2025-26 budget. A request to award a professional services contract for design, easement acquisition, and construction administration services for a drainage improvements project and stream restoration project at East Fire Tower Road. The Council also has to authorize the execution of grant agreement and assurances with the North Carolina Department of Public Safety Disaster Relief and Mitigation Fund. There are three public meetings on the agenda for the Council's meeting at 6 p.m. on Thursday. Members will consider a request to rezone 16.8 acres between Stantonsburg Road and the Norfolk Southern Railroad and west of the Southwest Bypass from residential, agricultural to industry. A resolution to close a portion of Grand Avenue. A presentation and comments on the 2025 Annual Action Plan of the Neighborhood and Business Services Department. Members will also hear presentations on the proposed fiscal year 2025-26 operating budgets for the Pitt-Greenville Convention and Visitors Authority, Shepherd Memorial Library, and Greenville Utilities Commission. Judith?
Thank you, Dick. Next up, how to protect your NC home from cockroaches. The weather's getting warmer in North Carolina, which means certain types of cockroaches could find their way in your home looking for food and water. Other types of cockroaches, however, can be found inside your home state year-round. But which cockroaches will you spot? The Charlotte Observer spoke to Chris Hayes, an NC State University Extension associate who specializes in educating the pest management industry, to find out which types of cockroaches you might see in your home, where you can find them, and how to make sure they choose other homes when sorting out their living situations. The German cockroach is the most common type of cockroach found inside homes in North Carolina, and they can be spotted any time of year, Hayes said, adding that the brown-banded cockroach can also be found in homes year-round. Hayes said other types of cockroaches found in the state include the smoky brown cockroach, an insect that prefers warmer weather, and the American cockroach, typically common in urban areas. Here's a description of each cockroach according to Orkin, German cockroach. Measuring slightly below 1 inch in length, they have a pale brown color with two dark brown stripes located behind their ear, their head, making them relatively easy to identify. Brown-banded cockroach, relatively small, reaching up to half an inch in length. One of their most distinguishing features is the two light yellow bands that run across their bodies, which are present in both males and females. Smoky brown cockroach, measuring up to 1.5 inches in length, they have a shiny appearance and are uniformly a black mahogany color. These roaches are often found in leaf, litter, and mulch, so their coloration helps to hide or camouflage them against predators. American cockroach, the largest cockroaches typically found in homes, with adults growing up to 2 inches in length. They have a reddish-brown to brown coloration, adorned with distinctive light yellow bands around the shield-like area behind their heads. Smoky brown and American cockroaches can be found pretty much anywhere, Hayes said. They love to come in from the attic space, Hayes said, referring to smoky brown cockroaches. And if you didn't clean your gutters and they're filled up with leaves, they'll love that too. They do fly, he added. Typically, they won't colonize your house, but they will find a way in looking for water. Hayes also pointed out that since American cockroaches can live in sewers, they can come into your house from the street or through cracked sewer piping. German and brown-banded cockroaches can't survive on their own outside, so they usually come in through a process called hitchhiking, Hayes previously told The Observer. If you're in a standalone home and you haven't had German cockroaches before and suddenly you find them, they likely came in on something that was brought into your home. It could be that it was an item you purchased from a thrift store. It could be that it was a box used to carry groceries home. German cockroaches can easily move within apartment buildings, Hayes said, meaning an infestation could travel to your apartment if they're inside your neighbor's unit. How to tell if you have cockroaches? The most obvious sign that cockroaches are in your home is if you see one, Hayes said. But if you don't see them, there could be other signs like poop. They're tiny little pellets, and you'll find them spaced out, Hayes said. You might see them in a cabinet or drawer or in kitchens and bathrooms because they can find food and water there. And you can't mistake it for rat poop since rat pellets are much larger, while cockroach poop is small and almost rectangular, Hayes said. Though it's less common, any signs of small bite marks on food or plastic left out could indicate a cockroach infestation, Hayes said. Are cockroaches dangerous? Sometimes. German cockroaches are a major source of allergens inside the home, Hayes previously told The Observer. These allergens can come from their saliva, shed exoskeletons, and feces. Hayes explained that German cockroaches live in aggregations or little groups that hide in the same place where allergens can build. What we're finding is that really high levels of these allergens in one area of the home can wind up in other parts of the home, even if there are not German cockroaches in those other places right now, Hayes said. So that could be because of the air in your home moving around. It could be because you move some furniture or something and stirred it up, producing these heavy allergens. According to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, cockroach allergy symptoms include sneezing, runny nose, watery eyes, and stuffy nose. American cockroaches can also carry disease-causing bacteria, such as Salmonella and Listeria, from the sewer to your home, Hayes said. That's definitely not something you want in your kitchen and around your home, he added. How to get rid of cockroaches. It's always best to contact a licensed pest control professional to handle cockroach infestations, Hayes said. Bait and insecticide are also effective ways to control the German cockroach population in your home. Bait is most effective when there aren't any other food sources around, according to the NC State Extension, meaning dirty dishes and trash should be cleaned to prevent infestations. Cleaning spills quickly and identifying any other water sources, such as leaky pipes, can also be useful. We've seen some evidence that baiting actually will work, even if there's other food sources, because some of these baits that these companies make are so effective, Hayes previously said. However, the baits that professionals have access to are much more effective. Finally, how to keep cockroaches out of your home. To keep cockroaches out of your home, Hayes said, you have to make sure your home is inhospitable to them. That means don't leave any food out, fix leaky faucets, make sure doors, windows, and other openings to your home are sealed, clean your gutters, and finally, trim vegetation that is touching the foundation of your home. We want to try to prevent these highways that allow these pests to get in, Hayes said. Dick?
Thanks, Judah. Reports: Israel approves plans to expand attacks on Gaza Strip. Israel plans to intensify its attacks on the Gaza Strip following a unanimous decision by the Security Cabinet led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli media reported early on Monday, citing senior officials. The plan is expected to be implemented only after President Donald Trump's visit to the region next week, the Times of Israel reported. In the meantime, efforts will focus on reaching a ceasefire and hostage deal with the Palestinian militant organization Hamas, according to the report. According to the Times of Israel, the Security Cabinet also approved a plan to renew aid deliveries to Gaza while overhauling the distribution system to reduce the risk of Hamas diverting supplies for its operatives. For over 2 months, Israel has not allowed aid deliveries into the sealed-off area, home to around 2 million Palestinians, prompting allegations that it is using starvation as a weapon. The United Nations has rejected Israel's proposal to deliver aid into Gaza under military-controlled conditions in a statement on Sunday, citing serious humanitarian concerns. The UN humanitarian team in Gaza said Israel's plan would violate core humanitarian principles and appeared designed to reinforce control over life-sustaining items as a pressure tactics as part of a military strategy. The proposed delivery mechanism would require UN approval to distribute supplies through Israeli checkpoints under conditions set by the Israeli military. The UN team warned that the proposed strategy would force civilians into militarized zones to collect rations, placing both them and aid workers at risk. Vulnerable people with limited mobility may not be reached, and the plan would likely contribute to further forced displacement. The UN said it could only support schemes that uphold the humanitarian principles of humanity, impartiality, independence, and neutrality. Israel has blocked all humanitarian aid into Gaza since early March, halting deliveries of food, clean water, and medicine. UN officials warn that civilians are going hungry and hospitals are unable to treat the sick and wounded. Israel says the blockade aims to pressure Hamas to release the remaining hostages taken during the October 7, 2023 attack. The UN has repeatedly called for unconditional release of all hostages. The UN also reiterated that international law prohibits collective punishment and obliges occupying powers to ensure the welfare of civilians. Israel has ordered a massive mobilization of reservist soldiers as part of an escalation of Israel's attacks on Gaza. Chief of General Staff Eyal Zamir has announced, "This week we are sending tens of thousands of call-up orders to our reservists to strengthen and expand our operation in the Gaza Strip," the military chief said during a visit to a military base south of Haifa. "We are increasing the pressure with the aim of bringing our people back and defeating Hamas," Zamir said in a meeting with members of the Naval Commando, according to a military statement. "We will operate in additional areas and destroy all infrastructure above and below the ground." Israel intends to respond to the Houthi attack on its international airport in Tel Aviv, not only against the Yemeni militia itself, but also against Iran, Netanyahu wrote in a post on X, saying that the Houthi attacks came from Iran. "Israel will respond to the Houthi attack against our main airport and at a time and place of our choosing to their Iranian terror masters, Netanyahu said. Eight people were injured on Sunday when Yemeni's Iranian-aligned Houthi rebels fired a ballistic missile at Ben-Gurion International Airport outside Tel Aviv on Sunday. The Israeli military confirmed an impact near the airport. Israeli news website Ynet reported that during an urgently convened security meeting, it was decided that Israel would carry out its military response to the Houthi attack in close coordination with the United States. The Israeli TV channel N12 reported that both Israel's Arrow 3 missile defense system and the U.S. THAAD, T-H-A-A-D, missile defense system failed to intercept the rocket fired from Yemen during interception attempts. Iran and Israel came dangerously close to an all-out war last year, with both countries carrying out aerial strikes on each other, raising fears of a wider conflict in the Middle East. Since the start of the Gaza conflict in October 2023, the Houthi militia has repeatedly attacked Israel and international merchant ships in support of its ally, Hamas. Since Israel's army resumed attacks on the Gaza Strip on March 18 after a ceasefire broke down, the Houthis have been regularly firing projectiles toward Israel again. Judith?
Thank you, Dick. And this next article has a headline, Government Watchdog Expects Medicaid Work Requirement Analysis by Fall. The country's top nonpartisan government watchdog has confirmed it is examining the costs of running the nation's only active Medicaid work requirement program as Republican state and federal lawmakers consider similar requirements. The U.S. Government Accountability Office told KFF Health News that its analysis of the Georgia Pathways to Coverage program could be released this fall. In its first 100 days, the Trump administration has said rooting out waste in federal programs was a priority, allowing billionaire Elon Musk and the newly created Department of Government Efficiency broad latitude to fundamentally alter the operations of federal agencies. The idea of a nationwide mandate that requires Medicaid enrollees to either work, study, or complete other qualifying activities to maintain coverage is gaining traction as congressional Republicans weigh proposals to cut $880 billion from the federal deficit over 10 years. The savings are intended to offset the costs of President Donald Trump's priorities, including border security and tax cuts that would largely benefit the wealthy. A majority of the public, regardless of political leaning, oppose funding cuts to Medicaid, according to polling released May 1st by KFF, a health information nonprofit that includes KFF Health News. A GAO investigation comes at a critical time, said Leo Coolio, a research professor at Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families. Congress seems to be pursuing cuts in Medicaid in a frenetic and rushed manner, he said. The GAO report could outline for Congress the full extent of problems with work requirements before they rush forward and do this without thinking. The experiences of Georgia and Arkansas, the only two states to have run such programs, show that work requirements depress Medicaid enrollment while adding costly layers of bureaucracy. Now, more states are trying to get sign-off from the Trump administration to approve work requirements for Medicaid, the state federal program that offers health coverage to millions of Americans with low incomes and disabilities. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which approves Medicaid pilot programs, such as work requirements, did not respond to a request for comment by publication. The GAO found in 2019 that the work requirement programs can be expensive for states to run, hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases, and that federal officials failed to consider those costs when approving the programs, which cannot increase Medicaid spending. Still, the Trump administration has supported work requirements. The programs require state employees to manually verify whether enrollees meet eligibility requirements and monitor their continued compliance. In 2023, more than 90% of U.S. adults eligible for Medicaid expansion were already working or could be exempt from requirements, according to KFF. During his confirmation hearing to lead CMS, Mehmet Oz said he was in favor of work requirements but didn't think they should be used as an obstacle, a disingenuous effort to block people from getting on Medicaid. The first Trump administration approved work requirements in 13 states. Nearly all the programs were blocked by the Biden administration or federal courts. Georgia is one of 10 states that haven't fully expanded Medicaid to nearly all low-income adults. The state launched Pathways to Coverage on July 1, 2023. It's been a main policy priority of Republican Governor Brian Kemp, whose office engaged in a lengthy court fight with the Biden administration after it tried to block the program. The program cost more than $57 million in state and federal dollars through the end of 2024, with much of that going toward its administration. As of April 25th, 7,410 people were enrolled, a small percentage of those who would be covered by a full Medicaid expansion. Pathways has also slowed processing times for other benefit programs in the state. When asked about the costs and benefits of Pathways, Kemp spokesperson Garrison Douglas instead pointed to Georgia's recently launched state-based Obamacare exchange. It saw record enrollment due in part to enhanced subsidies passed by the Biden administration. We're covering more Georgians than traditional Medicaid expansion would have, and for less money, said Douglas, referring to the state, not federal, share of spending. The enhanced subsidies that boosted enrollment are set to expire this year. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that extending them would cost the federal government about $335 billion over 10 years. In March, Arkansas asked the Trump administration to relaunch its Medicaid work requirement program. The federal public comment period on the program runs through May 10th. A previous version was halted by a court in 2019, but not before more than 18,000 lost coverage in less than a year. Georgia plans to request that the White House renew its program with modest changes, including reducing how frequently enrollees must prove to the state they're working on engaging in other qualifying activities. The GAO investigation into Georgia's work requirement program comes after three Democratic U.S. Senators, John Ossoff, Raphael Warnock, and Ron Wyden, asked the GAO in December for an investigation into the program's costs. Their request cited reporting by KFF Health News. Dick?
Thank you, Judith. Trump says, "I don't know." When asked about due process upholding the Constitution, upholding the Constitution. President Donald Trump said in an interview that aired Sunday that he did not know whether every person on American soil was entitled to due process, despite constitutional guarantees, and complained that adhering to the principle would result in an unmanageable slowdown of his mass deportation program. The revealing exchange on NBC's Meet the Press television program was prompted by interviewer Kristen Welker asking Trump if he agreed with Secretary of State Marco Rubio that citizens and non-citizens in the United States were entitled to due process. "I don't know," Trump replied. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know." Welker reminded the president that the Fifth Amendment says as much. "I don't know," Trump said again. "It seems it might say that, but if you're talking about that, then we would have a million or 2 million or 3 million trials left unmentioned was how anyone could be sure these people were immigrants without legal permission, let alone criminals without hearings. Trump responded, "I don't know," one more time, and referred to his, quote, brilliant lawyers when Welker asked whether, as president, he needed to uphold the Constitution of the United States. The comments came amid many legal challenges to the administration's agenda, especially Trump's aggressive deportation campaign. And as top administration officials have begun to question the president's obligation to provide due process, Trump has attacked judges, called for their impeachment, and ignored Supreme Court ruling directing his administration to facilitate the return of a migrant, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who was mistakenly sent to a prison for terrorists in El Salvador. Trump said in the interview that he may seek clarification from the Supreme Court on what is meant by the word facilitate when referring to the return of Abrego Garcia. Like most conversations with Trump, the interview roamed over broad territory covering subjects as diverse as recent economic data, his trade war with China, negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, his musings about an unconstitutional third term in office, and possible Republican successors. The interview was taped on Friday. The president, perhaps frustrated that President Xi Jinping of China has held firm under the pressure of the administration's 145% tariffs on China, reverted to tough trade talk after weeks of signaling that he was eager for a deal. Trump said he was not worried about a recession, despite some Wall Street analysts predicting one, and suggested it was a good thing for the United States to have gone cold turkey on trade with China, though prohibitively high tariffs. "We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars with China," he said. "Now we're essentially not doing business with China. Therefore, we're saving hundreds of billions of dollars." Very simple. Noting that the U.S. economy shrank in the first quarter, Welker asked Trump when he would take responsibility for the economy and call it the Trump economy rather than blaming it on former President Joe Biden. Trump's response encapsulated his lifelong relationship with credit and blame. "I think the good parts are the Trump economy and the bad parts are the Biden economy, because he's done a terrible job." Asked about the war in Ukraine and his administration's efforts to negotiate an end to it, the president said he had come close to walking away from the talks and still might do so. Trump claimed during his presidential campaign that he could strike a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine within 24 hours of taking office. About 100 days in, he now claims, oh, he was being sarcastic. He's been frustrated by the grinding process and lack of progress. And President Vladimir Putin of Russia has ignored Trump's public calls to stop the bombing of Ukrainian cities. Judith?
Thank you, Dick. You've been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this broadcast is generously supported by the Orchid Group at Morgan Stanley. We thank them. The content of this program is readily available as a podcast by visiting our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions, call us.